Good evening. My name is Neil Holford. This is my wife, Ann. Ann speaks all the time. It's been a while since I had the opportunity to speak before anybody, and they used to say to, to settle down and stuff, to picture your audience in their underwear, but now I just picture myself in it, and it seems to work quite a bit. I encourage y'all not to do that, though. You hear Ann's voice, you'll need to pray for her. It's pretty out of sorts tonight. She yelled at me a lot last night, so God has gotten her today, but she's going to give her best shot. We've been involved with Reengage over several years, off and on. It's a great ministry, and we really appreciate the opportunity to come and share our testimony with y'all tonight. We want to start by talking a little bit about where we came from, our families of origin. I know that there's a lot of folks in here, a lot of folks in this church, that have come from tough situations, from one parent, no parents, abuse situations. That's not our story. Our story is that we came from loving, regular mom and dad households that gave us every opportunity, supported us. Our moms are still alive. They still do that. So we don't really have that that we can even say that's any cause of any screw-ups we've had. Ours is all on us. We've got plenty of it, but we did it ourselves. So Ann's going to tell you a little bit about how we met, and we'll kind of go from there.
So seriously, forgive my voice. I don't talk like this normally. When I started UT Law School, I was dating a great guy that I was sure I was going to marry. And one day I was in the law library, and this guy walked up, and he said his name was Neil. I recognized him from my classes, and he asked about this cross necklace that I was wearing. I think it was kind of his smooth way of trying to find out if I were a Christian. So he invited me to study with some of his friends. And after that, Neil and I became great friends, and we ate lunch together at school every day. In October of that year, I had plans with my boyfriend that he was going to come to my parents' house in Houston and ask my dad if he could marry me that weekend. And of course, I was telling Neil about that because he was my great guy friend. But when I said that, he goes, "Well, there's something I need to tell you." And so he told me that he liked me as more than just a friend. Well, that totally caught me off guard because dating Neil had never even crossed my mind. So it was like one of those like awkward things. But something happened that day to change that. And so it turned out that the next couple of weeks were some of the best times that I ever had with the Lord, just trying to decide what his will was, because I did not know what to do. I really liked both of them. By Thanksgiving of that year, though, I knew I was not going to marry the other guy. And so Neil had invited me to come home to see his family. Now, the boyfriend I had was a committed Christian, but Neil had this relationship with Christ that was different than I'd ever seen before. It was like he really knew Christ and wanted to follow him in everything, and that kind of intrigued me. But when he invited me up here to meet his family that December, we'd been there about a day, and out of the blue, he asked me to marry him. And that totally caught me off guard because we had never even talked about marriage. I'd only even known him for like 2 months. And so in that moment when he asked me, I was like, okay, what am I going to say? And I just said yes. And I would not recommend that thought process to anybody else. You will notice if you went to Merge, they've never invited us to speak there. Anyway, I said yes, and that was over 30 years ago, and from that moment until now, I've never had any doubt that I was supposed to marry Neil. But there was more to that story than I actually knew at the time.
Yeah, you're supposed to get engaged, and then you have your first date. It's cool. Try it. It works out. I really was attracted to Ann the first day of law school, and that's the last place I ever thought I was going to find my mate. So it was not exactly it was a surprise. But the more we talked, the more I liked her. And the more she talked about the guy she was going to go see in Thanksgiving and probably get engaged. But they weren't engaged. I want to make that clear that they weren't yet. So it's all fair up to that point. So I thought, you know, this has been great. It's going to be a great disappointment, but I'm not sure I can, you know, go forward any farther than this. So I talked to my dad about it. My dad and I had a great relationship. We didn't talk about stuff like that much. But he said, do it. Tell her how you feel. Let the chips fall. Don't be disappointed in the end because you didn't go for the big thing that you think you want. That you think God wants you to do. And that's really the first time, and you'll hear it again a little bit later in our testimony, that I was ever encouraged to pray big, to expect big of God. I also had some friends who encouraged me the same. We had pretty much a group in community there before community was even cool, before it was even, the word was even sanctioned by the Christian church. But we had it. It was neat. They encouraged me to do it, so I did. And Ann just told you the story of what happened. And after that, we continued in community with those same guys who one by one got married. And over the first 10 years of our marriage, were a great part of our community. And were a big reason that our marriage has been a success.
Okay, well, then life happened. When we were ready to start our family, I had a miscarriage. Then we had our son, Will. And after that, I had three more miscarriages right in a row. We were really heartbroken by all that. And we grieved differently, but Neil gave me space to grieve the way that I needed to. I learned through that God was showing me not to look for my identity or my security or my significance in anything other than my relationship with Christ, not by being a mother or a wife. He showed me that whether I had kids or a good marriage or anything else was not going to be the basis of whether or not I was okay. That Christ has to be enough, whether I have those things or not. A verse that I clung to during that time was Psalm 73, 25 and 26. It says, "Whom have I in heaven but you? And beside you, I desire nothing on earth. My heart and my flesh may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever." So then, out of the blue, we had an opportunity to adopt a baby in a private adoption. And that's how we had our daughter, Caroline. And then 22 months after that, we gave birth to our youngest, Stephanie.
As some of you may know, that is a tough time, and especially difficult for the hopeful mother-to-be, but also for the expectant dad. And it really made us tremendously appreciative of our kids, and made us understand what a true blessing that they were. I don't think we've ever said anything to anyone in any way disparaging of having kids. Now our kids may differ when they, if you talk to them about how we talk to them, but it was a true blessing. It was a great thing. But what it did to me also was it sometimes made me hold our kids like this before God instead of like this, and think that I needed to be more in control, that I could fix things, that I could protect them. It probably had me stand in the way of some of the things that God may have wanted them to do because I thought it was too big of a risk, or wasn't okay with just letting God have it. And I learned some lessons over that time because of that. And it also taught me that sometimes I put my relationship with them above my relationship with Ann. They knew I loved them, but the greatest love I think that they experienced was me loving Ann. And the times that I have done that well, that has given them tremendous security. It lets them know that, hey, Mom and Dad are doing well, and we can have security in their love for us. So that's my encouragement, is God first and second, and the kids a very close third, but the marriage relationship has got to be solid, or the relationship with them will not be all that it could be. So God really taught me through that. We went after that. I was when I was late 20s, started running real high blood pressure, and I'd been obviously a pretty fit guy, but I started running high blood pressure and went in and got one of the first diagnostic type sonograms, and they told me that I had, like many Holfords before me, polycystic kidney disease, which is a condition or disease that you have multiple cysts on your kidneys, and they eventually kind of choke off the function of your kidneys, leading to dialysis or transplant, or if you don't do that, then leading to you won't be here anymore. So kind of track that over the next 15 years. And by the time I was 42 or so, or 41 or so, it started getting worse. My kidney function was down below 10%. And so I was looking for a kidney donor. And they had encouraged me to try to find a living kidney donor. And Ann, my sister, did not have the same blood type as me, so she was out. So Ann quickly said, hey, let it be me. Well, I had type O blood, and Ann didn't. So two friends of mine stepped forward and said that they would do it, and which is a pretty amazing thing for somebody unrelated to do that. And there's people in this church I know that have done that for others, which is a wonderful gift and a great thing. But anyway, we started the process and went to the doctor, and she came out, the nurse came out and said, good news, you're on the A list, which is the short list. Well, I had no doubt that I would be on the A list. I wasn't sure if it was because of physical prowess, mental prowess, or what. But so I wanted to clarify how I'd gotten on the A list, and she said, well, it's your blood type. So I thought, well, that wasn't quite what I expected. But also, you're incorrect. I have O blood, and that's why these two other guys are ready. And they go, no, we're correct. So they were right, which is the same blood type that Ann has. So 17 years ago, Ann gave me a kidney. This is pretty cool. It's also a very humbling thing, because, you know, you're supposed to be the leader of the family. You're the dad. You're the husband. You're supposed to take care of them. I'm supposed to take care of her. She's not supposed to have to give me something to keep me alive. So it really was a great picture for me of our true separation, our true helplessness before God, that there is nothing I can do to get on the A list with him other than understand that I am totally separated from him, totally helpless before him, and totally in need of the free gift of grace of Jesus Christ, like Ann gave me the kidney. So it was a great deal, and I guess April 11th was year 17 on it. So we're still going, and I guess something else is going to get me other than that, because it's doing pretty well.
I think I'd always assumed or really taken for granted that Neil was always going to be my rock. But when he was so sick, I had to take on roles that I never expected. I remember one night, Will had cut his foot out in the yard, and he needed to go to the ER. And Neil had just gotten home from the hospital for something that day. And so I had to take my son, who was like bleeding everywhere, to the ER by myself. I just remember thinking, that's not what I thought this was going to be. And it was instances like that where God started to remind me, hey, it's only God that will never change. Don't expect my husband to be what only God can be, and that is unchanging. God's miraculous provision for that kidney, it's one of the greatest privileges of my life. In Genesis, God says about marriage, he says, the two shall become one flesh. But we took that one flesh thing like a totally different direction than I thought we were going to. When our precious daughter Caroline, the one that we adopted, reached her teenage years, she turned her back on everything she knew was right. So pretty much anything that you can think of, we've been through. Rebellion, lying, drugs, serious alcohol, a string of boyfriends who are not who you dream of for your daughter, and friends who encouraged her self-destructive behavior. We lived in crisis for 6 years. I prayed for her until my knees were bruised. When she was 14, she got pregnant. It was twins. The twins, a boy and a girl, were born healthy and in one of the hardest decisions we've ever made in our life. They were placed for adoption in a Christian family, in an open adoption situation where we would continue to see them. Neil was a superstar during that time. He had to do some really, really hard things that no dad should ever be called on to have to do. We often talk about how God used that experience to change us, to make us way more humble and way less judgmental. I knew that God gives the role to the husband as the leader of the marriage and family, but I've learned that God gives us special wisdom for a husband as leader of a family that I need to listen to. I don't always listen. Some of the greatest regrets of my life have been times that I have not listened to the wisdom that God's given to Neil for our marriage and our family. After 6 years, dramatically and instantaneously, God changed Caroline's heart and brought her back to Him. It's an amazing story that I wish we had time to tell you about. One of the most amazing highlight moments of my life was watching Neil walk Caroline down the aisle at her wedding. And y'all, she married a student at Dallas Theological Seminary. If you knew me during that time, you've heard me say, if Caroline married even a half-decent human being, I'd be thrilled. Not a seminary student, seriously. At the wedding, Caroline's own birth mother was there. That's another story. We located her during that time. And the twins, who were 5 years old by that time, were the flower girl and the ring bearer at the wedding. Her wedding was a picture of God's redemption. The glory is His and His alone. When God says He's a God who redeems, that's really true. There is no situation that is too hard for God to redeem. God is in the business of taking things that are broken, rearranging the pieces, and putting them back together. You may be in the process of having God rearrange some of the pieces of your marriage. It may be really, really uncomfortable, but let Him do that. He can do that in your marriage, with your past, with your circumstances.
The thing, in addition to everything Ann has said that I learned through Caroline, was just how immeasurably powerful God is. And again, another encouragement to me now, 20 years later, to pray big. My prayers, like Ann's at the time, a lot of them were, let us know where she is, keep her safe, let one word coming out of her mouth be the truth, and just start her somehow on the path back to redemption. But as Ann said, it was overnight. It literally was, and it was real, and the coolest thing we've ever gone through, made by a God who, as Paul says, is able to do immeasurably more than we ask or imagine of Him. And He did that for us at that time, taught me to pray big. Like Ann said, I don't know where you guys are in your marriage, but if it seems impossible, it's not. Our God is a God of huge messes and huge miracles, and He can take care of it. And we've seen it in so many ways. And we've seen it in enough ways that you would think that at the end of that, Caroline comes back to the fold, the credits would roll, and everything would be great, and everything's been perfect since. And unfortunately, we're human, and it hasn't been. As our chaplain, where I used to work, used to say, we have a perfect company, and then we hired our first employee. And we, as many of y'all think, I have the perfect mate, and then you got married. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to keep being selfish, or I am anyway. I can only speak for myself. I'm going to keep being selfish. I'm going to take my eyes off God. I'm going to think I can work things out myself. Things are going to go well, and I'm going to think it's because of me. And I'm going to take away the focus that, the only focus that matters, and that's my focus on God. And that's my focus on things eternal. And I know that the only way I can have a great marriage with Anne is for my relationship with the Lord to be as good as it can be, and for him to craft me, to make me more Christ-like, so that I'll have the fruits of the Spirit, and I'll have all the things that will make me able to relate to Anne better and to minister to her better. So I just wanted to close, just to read just something about that, just about our focus on things eternal from Colossians 3, since then you have been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things, for you died and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. And then later in verse 12, he says, therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you, and over all of these virtues put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Thank y'all for letting us speak to y'all tonight.